Okay, we are about to begin the next presentation. We have Benjamin, who is here to talk about an introduction to digital consent, why a new definition with new tools and specifications are needed. Let's give a round of applause for Benjamin.
Thank you so much. I have a quick sponsorship message before starting the talk, so I just want to start with that so I don't forget it. A Danish organization called Django Denmark is hosting Django Day, like an annual one-day event for Django people. It's in Copenhagen. We found a really lovely venue on Nørrebro, and talks are coming in, and tickets are on sale, and so on. So that's on the 6th of October. And that's the website for that. So I hope that maybe you're interested. There is also a little Django perspective in this talk. I'm a software developer, and I want to talk about consent with the background that I have as a software developer. Maybe I'm not so precise on the legal aspect, so this is not like legal advice about how to do consent, but I hope it aligns with your understanding of GDPR and those sorts of legal obligations that we have when we build systems with data, basically. So it's also the first time in a long time that I'm doing a talk. Last time I was preparing a talk, I found out that I was very confused around what focus to find. So now I ask, like, why do I think this is a talk to present here for you and for your sake, for my sake, let's just make those terms clear. Let's make the purpose of the talk clear. I really want like more people to care about the question of consent, digital consent. But in order so that we can build something, and so that we can build something together. So I'll try to, as a software developer, maintain the aspect that we'll talk a lot about consent, but in the end, let's try to make it, turn it into a tool, so that when we want to have consent for something in an application, we're doing it the best possible way. So hope you agree to that. Some of it is below the fold suit. It's also Latin, but. So I'll try to cover these four aspects here. First, those pesky cookie banners that we all know about. They're everywhere. Then I'll talk a bit about consent, like what can we say, what sort of properties can we attach to consent in order to have a definition of it. Then, from that definition, can we specify something that we can use to implement software? And then, finally, I'll just share a little bit about what I've been trying to do. I hope that people can hear, because it's very loud for me up here with the rain. Okay, cool. So, those pesky cookie banners. I'll just show you a few examples to get the thought process started. What's happening right now with consent? It's basically that people want to continue to use and share data. Is it still okay? Yeah. They want to continue to use and share data the same way, kind of business as usual, but we'll just add even more layers of terms and conditions. I've been annoyed at it, and posted stuff on social media when I saw a dialogue that I didn't like. And I was trying to figure out some examples before the talk. And basically, I just went to the first two kind of random pages that I found. So these are not, these examples are not cherry-picked. I just went on the normal internet and looked. I went to WordPress.com, and they say they're the world's most popular website building tool. So let's hope they get consent right. I would say they don't. You go to the front page, and there is no consent dialogue at all. But there is trackers. So there is trackers on the website. For the stream people, I can say there is a very heavy rain coming down right now, so we have a lot of problems with the sound in here. I'll let folks move a little bit. Yeah, okay. So people are just moving around in the room here so that we can sit a little bit closer, and then we hope the rain will cool off. That's a lot better. Okay.
Yeah, it was the weather, not the technique.
So now the sound is better and people are closer to the microphone. I guess we continue. I went to the front page of WordPress.com, and there was no consent dialogue. I click get started. I go to the second page, and then the consent dialogue pops up. I think the designers of the website have decided that the consent dialogue is probably not a good user experience, so they want to hide that on a secondary page. I looked at the trackers, and they were the same on those two pages, as far as I could tell. And then, of course, they have this silly thing where you need to click customize, and then you have to toggle something in order to actually reject it. That's a pattern of, you know, trying to make people accept things, called a dark pattern often. Then I have a different example here that is a like really. That's when you go to Bloomberg.com. It's a giant thing you have to either accept all or reject all. And what I thought was very interesting about this one is a text that reads that you can actually manage those choices anytime, which I would understand that. A good effect for this dialogue. You can manage those choices anytime you want, but that doesn't really make sense, because if I go to the website again with a different browser session, how am I going to manage those choices from the previous visit? It's bizarre. The link just points to a generic page that's dependent on the cookie. So that's one of those real absurdities of revoking cookie consent. Like, how do you you may need to actually store those cookies yourself in order to revisit the sites. You may also need to have a log of your own IP addresses you've been delegated and whatever goes into your fingerprint that's used for this kind of ad profiling. Looking at those terms and conditions, those consent dialogues, they all contain something about profiling. So that's not profiling that is explicit, but it says that it may contain this and this and this element. And so in order to revoke it, I would pose that then the user needs to be able to know that about their own web browsing in order to, for instance, invoke the right to be forgotten or the right to have to see your own data. All those individual GDPR rights. And that is absurd. I think like no one's gonna do that, like even on the highest technical level, like knowing that and putting it into practice seems very far-fetched. So some other absurdities that that we notice is that there is actually a great HTTP header, the do not track header. And it seems to me that it would be easier if the ones that own websites instead would read that header instead of letting everyone have to read those awfully long terms and conditions. That's just a very simple solution to not consent to tracking. And then if that header is set, you don't even have to show those dialogues. You can give the user a better experience. Then there's browser extensions, kind of doing the same. Let's say you own a website and you can see that people are using tracker bloggers or ad bloggers. That's probably because they do not consent to the tracking, right? So you don't need to show them the dialogue. Then there is the very strange behavior of saying, like, if you continue browsing this website, then you automatically agree. Like, how do you note that someone actually saw that dialogue? And you might as well have missed it. That's the case of the Bloomberg thing here. They have in the background there, you can see there is a tiny, small, like yellow thing that says that they have updated their terms and conditions. And if you continue surfing the site, you just automatically agree to those changes. Very strange, I would say. That's a, okay, so. Let's be a little bit positive now. I would say that there is maybe an okay thing to think about during the past, like GDPR times, and maybe the past, I don't know, maybe it's a decade now that the cookie banners have been out there, but they did spread an awareness of tracking and so on in the larger population, right? And maybe that's an advantage. It could also be a disadvantage, though, because we get this now this consent fatigue. We have to look at way too many things and consent to them. So of course, we just stop looking. We stop caring, and that's quite human. Oh, this talk just keeps getting gloomier and gloomier. The normalizing is part of the fatigue, you could say, but it's also part of maybe saying, you know, oh, this tracking, it's innocent, everyone does it. Like, it's completely fine that we have a list of, I think the one of the cookie consent frameworks, they advertise that they automatically have an updated list of 2,000 third-party tracking companies, data processors. It's quite a lot, but then that's kind of just normal. And I think even worse is like that we get a bit like nihilism is creeping in. Like big tech is just doing whatever they want with our data, and we can't even read all these dialogues that we keep getting thrown at us. But yeah, good news. I think that cookie consent is not really any consent thing. Maybe we should find a better word for it. It's very hard to claim that this is informed consent, and we already can see how like very explicit revocations of consent that are being indicated in HTTP headers are being ignored. And yes, I think I've argued the case that it's in practice, it's not possible to revoke this type of consent. I asked a bit around, and I was happy to see that the general Born Hack audience on in the Fediverse also had a majority of things that reject this as a solution to tracking. Like, asking for consent in this way doesn't make tracking okay, as how I would interpret the response here, but also that some people have kind of given up hope. Some people also believe that we can improve cookie banners so that the consent can work. I'd really like to hear from them also. Let's say that we had a workshop and we could talk a bit more about our experiences with both cookie consent, but also other types of consents where you agree to some terms and conditions in a shop or with the public sector, then it would be a great fit to ask these basic simple questions. Is the consent I'm dealing with here, is it informed consent, meaning that the user knows what's going on? And how to withdraw that? And also the curious case, because often this legitimate interest is being mixed up. Often there is a blurry line that it looks like you have to consent to something, but actually it's called legitimate interest. But I'll try to come back to that. But that's a great idea for a workshop, I think. So I hope. I hope someone would be interested in that too. Moving on from the cookie banners, let's try to define something. Let's try to say what properties should real consent contain, and don't know, strong consent, true consent, just kind of trying to distance it from this mix-up with the cookie banners. First of all, real consent should be a voluntary thing. So if there is only one button called accept, and you need to accept in order to access something, it's not consent. It's an agreement, or it's like the terms, but that's nothing to do with consent. Like, we want the term to have meaning, and that meaning comes when it's a voluntary declaration or agreement between two parties. And secondly, it needs to be informed. So all this stuff about agreeing without reading, we need to get into a situation where someone consenting to something actually has an incentive to be informed about it. Then it should be revocable. That's also a very hard technical term, technical task. So to implement that a consent is suddenly being revoked, that could happen any time to the system, needs to get a signal, needs to do something, needs to scrub data, maybe tell other systems that they need to do the same. That can become quite complicated. Then it needs to be manageable by the user. So what does that mean? That could mean that the user needs a copy of what they're consenting to, or they need some kind of permanent access to the system. Maybe they need to store it in a wallet. There's many ways probably of implementing this. And then it needs to be auditable. So we need to be able to say, when we did this, and this action requires consent, then we need to track the action in a way that we can prove that we had the consent when we did that. So it needs to be auditable by someone, and especially when it comes to GDPR, then users can at any point in time require that you show proof that what you did was based on consent or legitimate interest. But you need to be able to prove that. And other functions from GDPR is this right to be forgotten, and also the right to have your data corrected, and so on. It's good to have all of that. And then it's a task now to implement. I just want to show this table, though, because what we've found when working with specification for consent was that people working with other systems that needed consent, they were sometimes confusing it with a normal agreement, but also they were asking the question, can't we also use this consent system to store regular agreements, any kind of contract in? And that's where the consent specification gets too muddy. So we want to be strict on what is consent and what is something else like a regular contract. The first thing was this point of it being voluntary. Like if there is a reject and an accept button, then we're good, then it's voluntary. People can reject it and the system understands the rejection. Then we need to have a purpose declared, an intention. That's kind of what consent does. You say yes to something that then happens, probably also has expiry. But with contracts and agreements, then you have more like requirements or obligations that that have to happen, and they probably also will happen, because contracts and agreements, they have like things about what happens if you don't do that. It's a promise of some kind, whereas consent, the one that gives the consent, can just revoke it. So I put those in contrast. And then the auditable part is something where I would say that the contract and agreement often is signed in a way that in itself it becomes the object that upholds its own contents, where the consent relates to a lot of actions that need to prove that they are related to that particular consent. So some examples that are not cookie banners is that governments, for instance, I'll just mention the two last ones, but very typical, a government will want to, institution will want to get your personal data from a registry somewhere, or exchange data in some kind of way to do an administrative task. And that needs consent often, but that's because you can reject it. So if you reject it, you replace it with another process. Then you can just like give them the information by showing your ID or by fetching it from somewhere and manually handing it over and so on. Another example is communication, where you accept that someone sends you a newsletter, and when you withdraw that consent, they stop sending you the newsletter. And then the one sending out the newsletter can, of course, store, like, now I sent to these people based on this consent. You can anonymize or hash the email addresses. And so you can build a nice little system that's consent-based. And actually, it's the subscribe-unsubscribe function of the newsletter. So when we build this, we need to ask some questions, like, in order to establish informed consent, there are some risks, and the best example of consent is when it comes to risks is medical consent. There will be a lot of risks implied with a medical procedure, and if the patient is conscious, you want informed consent, and they are incentivized to read it because the risks are very high. Whereas in the example of a data exchange, the user can perceive no risk at all and not want to read it. And that's where it gets a little bit more of a UX task, like, how do we present this thing so that the user actually perceives an incentive to go through it. That's a task not just for the legal department. I think if you just ask the legal department to do the whole consent thing, you're going to get a legal text and then you will have the problem of turning the legal text into informed consent. You need something that feeds people an understanding of the purpose and the risks and so on. Then the last part is also to ask, like, is any of this in the user's interest? Maybe, like, ask that, and then if the answer is no, then ask if consent is really the solution then, if you're doing something against the user's interest or not zero interest in it. It's hard to push in consent because it will not be informed consent. So try to put this proposal, kind of now it looks a little bit academic, that consent is understood as a voluntary, well-informed, and revocable declaration by an individual for another party to use and process that data in a specific way. And we have established a similar definition in a project that I'm part of that is government-oriented. It's a little bit like a slightly simpler version of it. So before giving the talk, I decided to add some more to the definition to make sure it's like a good and strong definition. So in this project called GovStack, where we are working with a specification for consent, we have also had to add something. So like as an example of what consent is not. that's like the second clause to the definition, is let's say the use of consent should be avoided in these cases when a person is simply informed by an organization. It's like, it's just an information and you cannot reject it or whatever. And when the consent system or a platform that is dealing with the consent has no way to identify the person, or like has no way to establish the consent is actually real, because then the owner of the consent platform can also suddenly like invent consent. That's not so good. So we want a system that's like tied up to some other system that can ensure that there is a signature or some kind of stamp on the consent. I'll get back to the data models for this, because now is the time for getting closer to, I've made a typo there, for the specification for digital consent. And I have copy-pasted the typo to each and every of the following slides. So the high-level requirement is to say we need privacy by design and privacy by default. I hope that you've heard the terms before, because I just really like those terms, and they're a very good starting point for specifying this system. In privacy by design, we want to say we start to design our whole system of data models, not just the consent models, but also in the rest of the system. When something has to do with consent, we need to sort of plug it into our consent system so that we know what to do when consent expires. Like do things based on the fact that consent should exist. If you are doing an operation in a system, maybe you need to check for the consent before even proceeding. That could be a way. Then we also want privacy by default. So that's very simple with this. Like, we just assume that the user hasn't consented. That's how we design the whole system. There is no consent. And then we have the entire track of how the system should work without the consent. The advantage is that actually consent can be a liability in itself. If you're storing a lot of consent with a person identifiable information next to the consent, then the consent system in itself contains things that that are privacy related. And if people are rejecting something and you are then storing their rejection, then you're storing the fact that this person doesn't want to do this. So we can get rid of that by defaulting to having a rejection state. So we did some work on in the GovStack project, and these are five pillars of the work. Firstly, we have done this based on some use cases, and the first use case is related to mother and child that goes to a health care center, and how this child is being registered in the healthcare center. And the second one is about payment in a public sector also. So benefits, you can say, and how to do those payouts and sort of manage data around citizens. We're not quite there yet with there's a lot of complexity in this, but we've started now to have enough that we can say that we have a functional specification for the most simple things. And there are some requirements, some UX requirements, some data models, and an open API specification. In the functional requirements, you need the administration part of the system. Someone needs to be able to configure and set up everything. So the administrator or configuration owner, those are the ones that are responsible for adding things that are like the texts that the user sees and should be able to update those texts and see how things work out, maybe mass reject everything when the consent is updated. The administrator also needs to be able to administer the general policy, privacy policy that guides maybe all the handling of data inside the organization. So we've got a bunch of functionality there. Then we've got the individual user who is in need of seeing her consent agreement, as we call it. So being presented by something to consent to, and then actually accepting or rejecting that. What we're used to seeing is like mega collections of a million things to toggle on and off, and we've just kind of envisioned that there is one thing at a time, and then you click accept or reject. Of course, they need to be able to look at what they have consented to later, and they need to be able to send revocations for things later in time. So it's kind of obvious. The other part is not so obvious. That's the auditing part, and we've kept that separate from system administration and users, individual functions. So this is an area that I think we will have a lot of future work with, and kind of understanding this whole aspect of what does auditing versus privacy mean? Like, what are we actually now delegating the auditor to have access to? Auditing can also happen through that someone looks into the consent system to see what is stored in the system, but it can also happen that auditors should be able to access the system that is doing stuff based on consent to see that things matches. Auditing can also be that a third party is owning copies of what is happening in this consent platform and then able to do their own auditing afterwards. We've tried not to specify exactly how that happens, but to have like a larger palette for that. Then we have the UX requirements, which I really wanted to have shown some of the mockups, but I didn't have the latest copy. But it's fairly simple requirements. It's kind of, I think that's the common sense that you would have if you thought about consent from your own perspective, like how would I like to be asked? So the first requirement that I really liked in this UX specification was that we want to just be clear about what data do we need, or what are we doing here, why are we doing it, and what does the user benefit from this or risk from it. And then the duration is also really important. Like, is this indefinite, or is it just some data that we have for a week and then we nuke it again? Super nice things to be reminded of. And I think that reading the UX specification can even end up being the entry point for understanding this platform, however it's made up. They also had a really nice note in the UX requirements, which is kind of a different take on what I have said earlier, that the system, if the users reject the consent request, then the ones that are designing UX for a whole application, they need to actually have a user journey where the consent is rejected. And many people always think how people would like to use their system in the accept kind of scenario, and then they forget that there is also a user journey where consent has been rejected. Very important also is when you're having the first exchange with the user and showing we need your consent here, of course it should be like visible. What do you do then if you change your mind? I've also seen UX mockups that actually lodge a consent dialogue in a survey all the way through the survey. So you start by saying, yes, I can accept this. But then as you're asked more and more questions in the survey, you're reminded that, oh, now I'm sharing this data, now I'm sharing this data. So then you can actually reject having your personal details attached to the answer or something like that. But like, have this information about changing your mind visible, and have like first class user interface for it. So then we had some data models, and just now is the time that I can again say that I'm a software developer, so I kind of want to get to this step because then I know what to do. This was the most simple version we could come up with to just show like what are the general entities in the system. We have this configuration area, that's where we manage the components of consent. So then we have the individual models that store the consent of the individuals to something. And our terminology is that this is the core of building this system, is to understand this data models, because then I think we'll go to a nice place where consent makes sense, or at least makes more sense, is to model with a data policy. So that's your general policy for data. Keep that separate. And then the consent agreement itself, which is the purpose, what data and why and for how long and so on. So there's some properties. We call that a consent agreement. And then we have a consent record. So a consent record, as you can see with the arrow, that's the link between an individual and a consent agreement, stating that the individual has consented to it. Of course, I should say that we have a model that's called individual, but whether or not it's a natural person, that doesn't matter to the system. It can be any kind of unique. If it's just an email address, maybe it just contains a hash of the email address, and then that's all the system knows. We also have the data. We have a data provider or consumer or processor. They also need to be able to look at consent in order to determine if the operation that they are doing has consent stored Then there is also a procedure, of course, that that makes sure that the system can return yes or no, but not necessarily state whether the user exists or not. Or it's an API basically. So I really like this this slide. I think that's I'm sorry it took so long to get here, but if you have any questions around it, then be sure to ask them if we have time. Now I'll just make it a little bit worse, because I thought this was okay simple, and add a little bit. What I'm adding here is the auditing part, because what we are especially interested in is that if the user changes their mind, or the consent agreement changes, or the data policy changes, then we need to track that. Otherwise, we don't know anything about the past. So in the specification, we have proposed that there is a revisioning system that can track things, if it's okay to track them. We have signatures, and if there is a way for the individual to actually sign their consent, of course they should be able to do that, especially if it's the public sector. They have all sorts of platforms for that. We've also added the life cycle. Preparing the system, the specification, was a way of understanding that consent has a life cycle from where it hatches in a legal department, maybe, that says we need this, and then in a place where the whole legal aspect of it maybe is being prepared, and then people interact with the system, but it may get used, it may change. That's why we have the revisioning. And finally, we need to be able to establish proofs, both so that systems that are using it can see that there is consent, and so that auditing can see that. So this like high level view is also turned into an open API specification, where it's like specific schemas with specific fields. So that's very nice. All of this is just a specification, though, so it's not an actual tool. So I want to go further now, because what I think we are ready to do is to take this specification, build an open source tool that is not necessarily for governments. That's probably very heavy, but at least can work for organizations that we are dealing with in our everyday life, that wants to ask our users simple things like send a newsletter or store some information, because we want to do a statistic in our organization about something. Let's have a tool that can do that the right way. I thought that since I'm from the Django world, I thought that we can build it with Django, because it's so nice to write data models in Django, and it's kind of like a rapid thing, so we can get quickly from prototype to something that we can implement in a real project. And I hope that this platform will turn into something that can both be a standalone platform that has an API, so that you don't need to use Django in order to use the application here, but if you use Django, then you can also do some added things. I'm thinking about adding a specific Django consent field that data models can say, I'm a row in a database that's based on consent. And if the consent changes, then I want to be deleted, or I want to be have this particular field anonymized, or whatever. People have been playing around with this before, but I found that the older tools were based on GDPR understandings, and they were kind of abandoned now. So The idea was to start the project and have these thoughts around the consent definition and specification from GovStack used as a way to bootstrap the project. So it has a repository. I just added a matrix channel today. So if you're interested in joining that channel and just you can use it to get updated on how it's going with the project, and you're also very welcome to participate in it. Then I wanted to add that I'm here, but only today at the event. So I hope you grab me to talk some more about consent, maybe here, maybe in the bar. I will use your input. I hope that's okay. So if you tell me something about how you think about consent, I will definitely get inspired and try it and use that. And if you want to get involved in the project, that would be super awesome. And my last recommendation here is that there is a super nice little episode of All Hail the Algorithm, which is an Al Jazeera series that some years ago actually took up the point of concept and really communicates it super well, makes it exciting and makes it essential for everyday folks. I take questions if there are any, and thank you.
Do we have any questions for Benjamin?
So, we talked about this a bit earlier, but it seems to me the biggest players in the game of tracking people's PII have a vested interest in not really getting consent from people, and patterns of behavior that indicate that they're not really interested in informed user consent, they're interested in maintaining their status quo and finding loopholes that allow them to continue doing that. And I think it's great that we think about how we can serve our users and how we can respect their data and their privacy, but it feels to me like the biggest problem is these bigger organizations that aren't going to play ball no matter what solutions exist. And I was wondering what you think about that and ways that you see of affecting a more positive change given those actors like Google, Facebook, other big tech.
Yeah. That's a really great question. I think there is some kind of tactical political game buried here that maybe we should stop even allowing them the right to use the word consent for these cookie banners. Maybe it's better to just say cookie banners. And then if we can get as far as building a tool that deals with real consent, I think we'll discover that the tool is absolutely useless for the type of data sharing that cookie banners are used for. So we'll just have a great tool that is great for actual consent, and then it's easier to see the differences. If that can work as a strategy, I would pick that because it's always nice to be able to show like the real consent. And yes, they will not. I'm pretty sure that at some point someone's going to make a proposal in the European Parliament, because now it's not the same Parliament that gave us GDPR. It's a different Parliament, and someone's going to say, "Look at this. This is absurd. Let's get rid of it and go back to the good old days where we just shared data without even having the cookie banners." I mean. Maybe that could even be better for actually having consent now that everyone understands what shady stuff is going on anyways. Like, it's kind of weird to have a cookie banner that you just kind of know that it's being mismanaged and it's not really authentic.
You have one more question?
Thank you. I had a similar thought, but I think during the presentation you, without intending, proposed an approach to dealing with the disservices that don't respect end user freedoms. You said it's impractical to record every IP address I've used and every website I've accessed, but actually I don't think so. We could make a browser extension that does that and automatically request to be forgotten. Would that be a reasonable approach for dealing with the sort of company that we were just discussing?
Yeah, I didn't think anyone would say that, but I'm glad you say it, because if someone can establish what they are doing as a person and giving and not giving consent to, and then use that to inquire into their data in a very precise manner and finding out that things are happening or not happening as they should be, then we have a case that can be a legal case, right? Then we can escalate from there. But I mean, so with all those pages in a typical consent cookie banner, I should say, sorry, it seems like it's very lot of legal details going on. So it'll be a big thing if we get that. But if we make the first step and we can see that there is something more buried, then I think it's worth doing, especially with the do not track header. Just maybe that's also a simple way to establish, like, I'm using a do not track header, why are you not respecting it? Should you legally respect that?
I'm interested in why you connect government building blocks to consent.
Yeah.
Because from my understanding, most of what we do in government don't really need any consent. So yeah. Is government here actually the holder of the consents, or why is government involved?
I didn't include anything on the GovStack project because I was afraid of that would take up a lot of time to explain. But GovStack is essentially not a government owned project, but it does have governments in it that the German Foreign Aid Ministry is in it, Estonian government is in it, the ITU, the International Telecoms Union is in it, and the Digital Impact Alliance is in it. So these organizations, they wanted from the beginning to be able to supply that functionality from an understanding that it is the right thing to do. But there's many places where you don't need it. You could just, like, not have this so-called building block in your set of building blocks, because the legal situation would say you can do whatever you want because you're a government. But I think when the tool is available, at least even though the government doesn't have to, then they could. What we found also when we were building this specification was that there aren't any tools that satisfy our specification. So that, I think that was an important discovery in itself, was to work with this, set up the specification, and then discover, hey, we actually need open source tools, and GovStack is based on open source. That makes it also interesting. Digital common goods in this context. And we need a digital common good that can satisfy this consent specification. Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, I wasn't for the whole talk, so I apologize in advance if I'm asking something that you already brought to the topic. But I have a two questions. Actually, the first one, talking about legal, have you made some approach to some kind of organization, like, we have an organization called Legal Tech Lab. So legal tech is kind of a buzzword for now, but is there something happening in that end that you can make a case regarding, like, hey, I'm not giving consent, or this consent was not acquired in a legal attaining context, so this is not valid, therefore you're not permitted to keep my data? So that's the first question that I have.
Unfortunate that I don't personally go out and do the work of seeing what's going on in that department, but it's a very it seems like in the room there is actually a little spark of energy to go that direction, so we could say, like, we are building a tool that can actually do the things we want in relation to consent. But then we also want to expose like these practices of fake consent or like not respecting the consent. So I would encourage myself and everyone to look for that, because there could be something, yeah.
And yeah, the second question that I had is like also considering like reaching to the parliament for having something to pass by, that will require, for instance, taking a look at vulnerable groups, like let's say German is not my first language. So I will just be giving consent in order to get into a website to search for an apartment. So things of that nature, saying like, okay, if you are requesting consent from this person, at least have the decency to put the information on the language that they can understand, or for sites that are just providing that in a certain language, or also looking out elderly people that for them would be like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, I just want to see pictures of my nieces, just get me in there. I will consent to anything. So it feels like kind of taking advantage. So I was just asking if this is also something that can be considered.
Yeah, it definitely makes me want to say again, like the informed part of consent, it should be part of the definition. If there is no informed consent, then it's not really consent. What is it then? I don't know. The second part was that I forgot to mention accessibility in UX requirements. So of course, UX has to be catering for the user's needs. Yeah, super basic stuff, but I should have added that. Thank you.
In my experience, users or every users, they find it very hard to make that risk assessment of what is the consequence of me giving accept that you can use my data. So how will this tool help people do that risk assessment? I know for the site, okay, I can see if I make a consent, I can do this, I cannot do that. I understand that, but in the broader picture, how will it help that assessment?
I think that knowing that you can always go back and revoke your consent, and from the beginning knowing how to do that is super critical, because yes, we cannot guarantee that the user actually reads what they accept. There's no guarantee of that. They're like, they scroll through the window in 2 seconds or 5 seconds or 20 seconds, when have they read it? These types of functionality doesn't work, but maybe establishing a convention about consent so that if you have a user interface, then kind of the same way that we are switching between light, dark mode themes or switching languages, we also know that this icon means consent. I don't even know if maybe someone uses the checkbox to say it's about consent, but a well-established convention for consent will mean that people can change it and then have a system that understands that consent can always change at any time.
Awesome. We are at the hour. Let's give a round of applause for Benjamin.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.